CRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint, a critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and my guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. You're well, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
You're welcome. And Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum to you too, and welcome to the studio.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me as always.
You're welcome. The pleasure is all mine to have you back in the studio, helping me actually criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. One of those movies which caught our eyes was Poltergeist. I mean, the newer version. Which was produced in 2015, directed by Gil Kinnan. Well, this guy, this director, is known for his work on films such as Monster House, produced in 2006, or The Monster, again produced in 2016. Well, he brings a strong visual style and a keen sense of suspense to the Poltergeist remake. The original movie of Poltergeist was produced in 1982, though. Well, the whole movie is revolving around this story with evil spirits lurking about. The Bowen family's life turns upside down when their youngest daughter is held captive in the depths of their new house. Well, this movie features Rosemary Duet, Sam Rockwell, Kennedy Clemons and Jared Harris, to just name a few of those, actors and actresses playing in this movie. Rotten Tomato gives this movie 29%, but IMDb 4.9 out of 10. Well, the budget was $35 million, while, the box office was $95.4 million. Let's take a short listen to a part of this movie, a short part, and then we'll be back and criticize this movie.
We didn't know where else to go.
You did the right thing coming here. Maddie was the first one to notice things.
Mom, how will you get here?
Who are you talking to?
When was the last time you had contact with her?
Before she was taken?
Back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, helping me criticize the movie Poltergeist, produced in 2015, directed by Gil Kinnan. Brother Yasser, let me start this episode with you. What are the themes of this movie, Poltergeist, produced in 2015, and or the message that this movie is trying to convey?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. One of the messages: be careful where you build your house.
Mm.
You know, don't build it anywhere. Do proper investigation of the land and you know where the land was. This is again a fiction, a mm-hmm. movie of fiction.
Yes.
Not necessarily that may be the case. Or for example, you know, don't take certain elements or certain things for granted. For example, be careful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I remember in the older version of it, the young girl, if I remember correctly, vanished into the house, into another dimension, and you could hear in the walls. I'm sure something happened in the new one as well.
Mm-hmm.
She just vanishes, and you hear sounds, and she's walking around the house and so on. You know, don't take things like this for granted. Yes. Not to say that if your child vanishes inside your house, you mm-hmm. know. So these are certain things that you can take from the movie. Obviously, understanding it is a work of fiction. It is not real.
Yes.
Obviously, it is playing, if I'm not mistaken, it's on a very old movie. It may be from a book, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Most of the things are from books. But again, this is some of the things that we do. Don't mess with evil.
Yes,
and that's exactly. One of the things that theme always plays about in all his horror movies.
Yes, fragility of human spirit exactly. In the face of the unknown.
You know, that's what they show, right? Unfortunately, this is a message that is not a very good message, though. To show that, the forces beyond the human being are a lot stronger and stuff. This is not the case. We don't believe this, especially in the religious circles. Is that, especially within the Islamic circles, is that those beings or anything that is outside of a human being, it's not that because a human being has this physical capacity and so on, it is weaker. No, a human being is a lot stronger than any of these creations at the end True. Of the day. If it wasn't the case, then it wouldn't have been known as the best of creation.
Yes, but most of these movies are trying to portray what you've been actually advocating, like from the Islamic perspective. Yeah. Like you said, for example, don't go near such cult-driven activities or practices, paranormal activities, right? As you said in one of the earlier episodes, mm-hmm. that it's like haram or unlawful, Islamically speaking, for normal individuals, basically. And usually it's based on this kind of, a proverb which says, curiosity killed the cat.
Yeah.
And mostly when people become curious with such mm-hmm. Metaphysical entities outside of their control, then things could, turn somewhere else where you don't want it.
I mean, also, it keeps the mind busy, right? I mean, that's the point of Hollywood and these movies as well. It keeps the mind busy. So it plays both, right? It creates curiosity
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
It shows the danger of it. So a person, is it really, like a child, is it really like this?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it may also create a kind of attraction to these type of things.
Yes.
You know, because they will show like, it's nice in the beginning and then all of a sudden it flips.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be more careful. You know, that type of person will come. I'll be more careful when I do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it kind of plays on both sides of the coin. You could argue that.
I see. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a short part of the movie Poltergeist, produced in 2015, directed by Gil Keenan. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio.
It's a fixer-upper.
All the houses are like this in our price range.
Do you want to see Jack?
No way.
You try.
We like this house!
Back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mama Jad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, as always, Syed Abdullah and Pradi Yasser, helping me criticize the movie Poltergeist, directed by Gil Keenan, produced in 2015. Syed Abdullah, what's the significance of the dollhouse in this movie, I mean Poltergeist, and what was the role of the dolls? Could any object be physical manifestation of the entity's influence?
Now, in the movie itself, the smaller version of the house and dolls were supposed to mimic the actual house of the family themselves.
Yes.
And through that, the house was used as a gateway for the spirits to go through and do whatever they do. So it's a mini version of the actual house that acts as a gateway. So you can see this theme, it's not only in this movie, but even other movies where they use the same kind of items of the exact thing,
mm-hmm.
or a doll that represents a person, for example, and they use their voodoo or whatever they want because they assume that through that they can connect to the actual realm or to the actual people, to the actual houses. So this is what the theme is trying to portray here, that they play that role. When it comes to the doll, the dolls in the film, they used to signify the presence and the influence of the spirits themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know why this seems to be a Hollywoodic idea or theme where dolls are the manifestation of spirits. They go through
it. We see it in the other movies too. With the
dolls, it's very common. Yeah. It's very common that the doll moves and does things, and the spirit possesses the doll itself. So in order to scare you.
Like, isn't it threatening to the whole business of the dolls? Like, for its sake?
Well, actually, sometimes it works the opposite. Sometimes if you create a good movie with a good doll, it becomes a selling point. For example, if you talk about, what's that toy's name?
Chucky,
yeah.
Chucky became a household item, it means a lot of sales. So sometimes if they master it correctly, the actual doll, it ends up being a selling point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Syed Abdullah. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Poltergeist, directed by Gil Kinnan, producing 2015. And then we'll continue our program, Viewpoints, the movie critic program on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
We have to call somebody.
We can't call the cops.
What are you going to tell them?
First things first. Your daughter is here, and she's alive. This development was built on a cemetery. This isn't just a few pissed off spirits we're dealing with. It's a poltergeist.
We just want our daughter back.
The door in their world could close at any moment.
If that happens,
there's no getting her back. I want you all to clear your minds. They already know what scares you.
Back to the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Poltergeist, produced in 2015, directed by Gil Kinnan. Well, Brother Yasser, to what extent is there a relationship between nasty games and experiencing the vicious spirits? For the unknown entities. We have seen it in the other movie that we criticized just before.
So again, is there actually a relationship? Is it just a kind of placebo by which a person thinks they're communicating with something?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you kind of, what's the word, self-impose a certain idea on yourself that all this is working.
Like inspired?
Yeah, not inspired. Like, for example, you play one of these demonic games or one of these board games and so on and so forth, and every single sound that you hear, it might just you feel, oh, it's the spirit speaking to me. It's like the self-fulfilled prophecies that you're doing for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How they work, and if they actually do work, I don't know. Again, as we mentioned this in one of our previous, if it is a particular tool that was placed in the hands of man by the demonic forces that are here, then it shows that they may be one of the means by which a human being can, not, again, opening up or something. There's no need to open. There's already a connection between this world and the next world. There's not like a sever between this world and the next world.
Mm-hmm.
It is, in one, if you want to say. It's very difficult to explain in words. But in order for a particular thing to manifest itself in this realm, is it this needed? Maybe. It may hit certain buttons.
Yes.
That enable that manifestation to take place. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't
know. I see. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program. And we try to criticize the movie Poltergeist. Of course, we haven't finished its critique. And then we hope that you follow us up for the upcoming episodes to actually finish the critique of this movie. And thank you very much for joining us and listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The process of uprooting Palestinians has intensified amid the war on Gaza as the Zionist regime seeks to eradicate the right of return. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, the refugee camps of Nur Shams and Jenin in the northern occupied West Bank are witnessing a comprehensive Israeli-driven war of destruction. It is part of a plan to uproot Palestinian refugee camps, similar to ongoing events in Gaza and reminiscent of the 1948 Nakba. This aligns with the Zionist regime's vision of a war declared long ago on the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, which has reached its peak during the war on Gaza. Are things headed towards a forced displacement situation in the occupied West Bank? The camps of Jenin and Nur Shams have been raided repeatedly in a process of uprooting that began before the war on Gaza. The northern occupied West Bank and the Jordan Valley have long been targeted for intensified settlement activity. According to UNRWA, there are about 870,000 Palestinian refugees in the occupied West Bank, with many packed into dense camps, where community ties are strong. The Zionist regime views these camps as incubators of armed Palestinian struggle, as it seeks to eradicate the refugee issue and the right of return. Since the Israel's declaration of war on Gaza, top Israeli officials have reiterated the mantra of a long war, one that would last for years, changing the face of Gaza and the entire region. But this does not necessarily mean the war will achieve its objectives. It could achieve some goals, but it could also become a series of failures accumulated over years. The talk of a years-long war runs contrary to Israel's long-standing doctrine of swift, short-term wars to achieve maximum gains in the least amount of time to avoid repercussions. The war on Gaza has become one of the longest in Israel's history, rivaling the war of attrition with Egypt in 1969-70. The ultimate goal of this war is to end the Palestinian question. It is being fought on one front, militarily, as the Biden administration contributes vast military resources towards a maritime port project that could facilitate the forced transfer of Palestinians from Gaza by sea after Egypt rejected plans for a refugee influx into the Sinai. About 2.3 million people live in the densely packed Gaza Strip. After the Zionist regime launched its war, Rafah was intended to serve as a gathering point ahead of a mass displacement to the Sinai, but Egypt's refusal of this scheme was supported by other Arab states, turning Rafah into an Israeli dilemma with no solution. A wide-scale invasion of Rafah would exacerbate the catastrophe in Gaza, but if the Israeli regime prime minister Benjamin Netanyahu backs down, he would lose his promised victory in the war, which he claims is just steps away. The war on refugee camps in the occupied West Bank aligns with the plans formulated by Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich to massively expand settlements, while settlers have been rampaging through the territory, attacking Palestinians and setting fire to their land and property, all under the protection of the Zionist regime army. Strategically frustrated and unable to achieve or retreat from its war objectives, at least under the ruling political class, the fabricated regime of Israel is headed towards uncontrollable escalation against refugee camps in the occupied West Bank, similar to what has unfolded in Gaza. Settlement expansion will not succeed while these camps remain internally cohesive. So, the Zionist regime is rapidly working to dismantle them. Several conclusions can thus be drawn from Israel's war on West Bank refugee camps. This attempt to uproot refugees falls within the regime's broader annexation drive, which is also integral to the war on Gaza. Forced displacement will likely occur in the occupied West Bank if this plan is not stopped. Palestinians cannot rely on the U.S. regime, which uses its veto at the U.N. Security Council to shield the Israeli regime and to prevent the recognition of a Palestinian state, a move serving only to highlight the isolation and declining the influence of this major world power, which coincides with Israel's own declining regional influence. The downfall of the Israeli government would be significant if it happens, but this would not be enough to present a new horizon for Palestinians, since there is no real political alternative to Netanyahu. Israeli policy is fundamentally stuck. As the Zionist regime's comprehensive crisis deepens, its leaders are viewing escalation against the Palestinian people as a delusional way out. Strengthening the presence, protection, and survival of the Palestinian people should be the primary focus at this stage.
Thank you.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Assalamu alaikum. Again, we are here on today's special on Friday, 24th of Shawwal, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 14th of Ordibehesht, 1403 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 3rd of May, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, it's the time of the Holy Quran. For today, we listen to verse 9 of chapter Az-Zumar, chapter 39 of the Holy Quran.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Amman huwa qanitun ana al-layli sajidan wa qa'iman يحذر الآخرة ويرجو رحمة ربه قل هل يستوي الذين يعلمون والذين لا يعلمون إنما يتذكر أولو الألباب.
Is one who is devoutly obedient during periods of the night, prostrating and standing in prayer, fearing the hereafter and hoping for the mercy of his Lord, like one who does not? Say, are those who know equal to those who do not know? Only they will remember who are people of understanding.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Ma lana rabbun siwa.
The word knowledge, or in Arabic term, ilm, is not employed in the sense of knowing some terms of the material links amongst things. In other words, it does not indicate formal sciences, but it denotes a specific knowledge and awareness that leads men to obedience to Allah and fear of judgment, makes men to set his hopes on divine mercy. Contrary to what the ignorant imagine regarding religion as the opium of people, the most fundamental prophetic calls addressed gaining knowledge, thereby proclaiming their objection against ignorance at all times.
رب صل رب سلم على طه المعلم نبع خير شمس حق من السماء. You're the light of my eyes, you're the answer to my cries, you're the dawn that chased away my darkest night. وإن لم أراك يا حبيبي عين روحي دوما تراك نور من الله كي يضيء لنا الحياة. يا حبيب قلبي يا محمد يا إمام دربي يا أحمد يا شفيع ذنبي يا طه عليك صلى الله.
And our topic for this episode, the status of teachers in Islamic point of view. In Islam, the act of imparting knowledge is highly esteemed, with teachers holding a noble status within society. Prophet Muhammad emphasized the importance of seeking knowledge and honoring those who impart it, stating, "The seeking of knowledge is obligatory for every Muslim. This reverence for knowledge and those who transmit it
underscores the significance of the teaching profession in Islam. Teaching is not merely a job, but a means of seeking blessings and spiritual reward in Islam. Prophet Muhammad taught that the one who imparts knowledge to others will be rewarded for every beneficial word taught, with the rewards continuing to flow even after their passing. This belief in the enduring blessings of teaching serves as a source of motivation and solace for educators in the face of the challenges they encounter.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome. This is Ali, your host, and we shall be talking about the value and position of teacher. The position of a teacher is highly and significantly valued in Islam, to the extent that the position of a teacher is compared to that of the prophets in the speeches of many religious leaders. Jawad Iqtisadi Khah is one of Allama Ja'far's teachers in the fourth grade of primary school. Allama Ja'far calls him a virtuous, pious, and compassionate person and adds that one day when I was giving a lecture at Mashhad University, as soon as I sat down at the table, from a distance I saw a person who looked familiar. I looked closely and saw that Mr. Jawad Iqtisadi Khah is there. When I saw his face, I could not speak for a few minutes due to the feeling of respect. You see, these are the scholars who are respecting their teachers. Ayatollah Mutahhari, the late Ayatollah Mutahhari, spoke of his teacher, Allama Tabatabai, with great respect and honor. And in some of his speeches and writings, he mentions him as the venerable teacher, Allama Tabatabai. May my soul be sacrificed for him. So you see, this is the way that the late Ayatollah Mutahhari mentions the name of his teacher. It is not the case that anyone who acquires the power of memory and storing and handing over scientific and literary terms and reserves and passes them on to the learners is a teacher and has assigned himself a spiritual home and a position and spiritual merits. If acquired knowledge is not compatible with faith, right actions, and wise words, not only will it not be a source of guidance and growth, but it will be a source of misguidance.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
And the continuation of this program, today's special, we look at one of the teaching strategies of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family. His teachings were based on living experiences as opportunities to instruct. For example, the Prophet once was with some companions to prepare food. He asked them to slaughter a sheep. One companion said he would do that, another said he would skin it, and a third said he would cook it. Then the Messenger of Allah replied, "I will collect wood for the fire." They said, "No, we will do that work for you." The Prophet answered, "I know that you can do it for me, but Allah hates to see a servant of his privilege above others." And the Prophet went and collected firewood.
Ya khayr khalqillah, ya taj rasulillah, alayka asqa salawati, ya
This is today's special inspiration to help us reestablish our intention as teachers. Education is the gift that keeps on giving. Education is a non-stop task, and as such, its profit is unending. How many as educator do not praise even if they left this worldly life? The Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, said, "The best of what a man leaves behind are three: a righteous child who supplicates for him, ongoing charity, the reward of which reaches him, and knowledge that is acted upon after him." A person who teaches leaves behind professional knowledge that may have a lasting impact. The best lessons you share may be remembered for a lifetime, even if you do not perceive it at that moment.
That approach where I'm looking for knowledge like I'm thirsty, or like I have lost something, or like I need to go on a journey and I don't care how far it is, because what I'm getting is a treasure that is worth finding.
Yes.
That approach is what the Ahl Bayt and the Prophet established in us from a young age, in the age of Islam. That you have to seek knowledge like you are desperate for it, more than you seek wealth in the grind of work in a highly capitalist society. No, that's not what you are made for.
No, definitely.
You're made for increasing with God. And the more that you know yourself, man arafa nafsahu, faqad arafa rabbahu, you will find your Lord in that journey. And don't forget it for a second. When Imam says to us, man nasya nafsahu, nasya rabbahu. If you forget yourself, you forget your Lord.
Yes.
So your whole life is this journey of increasing knowledge and finding
and
God
finding
together.
Closest to God,
that's the
right?
point of religion.
Perfection of self. Knowledge of self is to know your God.
Precisely.
And if you continue that journey, I mean, I've just reread a book called The Alchemist. It's not a religious book.
It's a good book.
It's a great book, but it's literally about that journey towards destination. But within that journey, he seeks and finds God, you know, within that whole thing, and he understands the soul of the world and everything that's around him. And then when he gets to his destination, I won't give away the ending, but, you know, it's about that journey. And throughout that journey, he gains so much knowledge that he becomes an alchemist.
Right.
He has knowledge of everything around him. There's a point in there, he even talks to the sun and talks to the wind and commands it.
Yeah.
Because he had that so much knowledge of what was around him. And it's so relatable to, you know, what our teachings of the Ahl Bayt alayhim salam, you know, tell us.
Most definitely.
It's amazing, actually. Speaking of the Ahl Bayt alayhim salam, we can't talk about knowledge without talking about Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam and Imam al-Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. The pillars, the fountain really of education and spreading knowledge. They had the freedoms in their time to be able to spread knowledge.
It was a distinct period of time, those decades, in the history of the A'imma. It's true. Imam Ali, we have narrations from him, but much of Nahj al-Balagha is like private conversations someone wrote down. Or sermons given at different times when he was, situation necessitated giving lectures or speeches. But he's only in power for what, 3 or 4 years?
That's it.
It's not enough time to use the minbar for an institution of learning when you're fighting 3 civil wars at once.
Exactly.
Undoing the innovations of those that came before you.
Yeah.
And coming towards the end of your life during your own time.
Yes.
Dear brothers and sisters, that was all for today's special. If you want to listen to all episodes of today's special, you should check our archive. At first, you go to parstoday.ir/en, then Call of Islam page. There is our archive there. Thank you very much, and fi amanillah.
Mustafa, anta nabiyul amin. وسيد المرسلين رحمة للعالمين جئت بالحق اليقين أنت النبي الأمين وسيد المرسلين رحمة للعالمين جئت بالحق اليقين
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Palestine declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. Why on earth hasn't Israel been booted out of FIFA? That's the question we'll be trying to answer in today's programme. Other countries have been suspended for far less. Latif Abu Chakra has been looking at the shenanigans inside FIFA to foil previous attempts at getting Israel suspended from international football competitions because of its crimes against humanity.
The International Association Football Federation, more commonly known as FIFA, has refused to act on widespread calls to suspend the Israeli Football Association, despite the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people. The call to suspend Israel from FIFA is not new. In 2015, the Palestinian FA tried to present a motion to FIFA's annual Congress, which sought to have Israel suspended. The motion explained how Israel's apartheid practices and use of teams from illegal Israeli settlements was against FIFA's rules. But FIFA's president at the time, Sepp Blatter, worked hard to stop the motion from being presented. Blatter met personally with both Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to try to work out a compromise. The Palestinian FA withdrew its motion from the Congress after the Israeli FA agreed to lobby the Zionist regime for better treatment of Palestinian athletes, and FIFA agreed to form a committee to monitor Israeli actions. This became known as the FIFA Monitoring Committee Israel-Palestine, which was supposed to present a report to a future FIFA Congress. 2 years later, in 2017, the Monitoring Committee proposed that Israel should be given a yellow card for 6 months to prove that it was adhering to FIFA rules and regulations. However, Benjamin Netanyahu reportedly called the new FIFA president, Gianni Infantino, asking him to remove the motion from the Congress agenda. Netanyahu and Infantino apparently spoke for half an hour. The motion was then quickly blocked from being discussed at the Congress. Since the Zionist entity began its genocidal campaign in Gaza in October 2023, the Palestinian FA, in addition to many other organizations around the world, have renewed their calls for Israel to be suspended from FIFA. An online petition, which has been signed by nearly 100,000 people, has asked FIFA, as well as other international sporting bodies, to suspend Israel. The wording of the petition makes reference to the hypocrisy between FIFA's actions against Russia in comparison to Israel. Within less than a week of Russia beginning its special military operation in Ukraine, FIFA quickly took powerful measures against the Russian Football Union, expelling it from the 2022 World Cup in Qatar and suspending Russia's teams from all international football competitions. Meanwhile, over half a year into its genocidal campaign in Gaza, FIFA has taken no action against the Israeli FA. Despite the enormity of the Palestinian death toll and the scale of destruction in Gaza, this case demonstrates yet again the dominance of Western regimes in so-called international organizations.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a senior research fellow at the Center for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeym University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and he's a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest today is Dr. Katerina Pietlevich. Katerina is an associate professor of sports law at the Global School of Law at Catalonica University in Portugal, and she's co-organised a petition to ban Israel from international sport. Welcome to the show. Katerina, what specific actions has the Israeli FA been accused of, and how do these actions violate FIFA's rules?
There are too many of them, and I can only list them. We have things like, starting from very basic, is that the freedom of movement of athletes, of players, of officials between Gaza, between West Bank, and the opportunities for the players that exist outside of the Gaza and of Palestine, well, they cannot use them. Often you would see at the checkpoints, the players being harassed, sometimes shot in the feet, so they cannot play football ever again. So the traveling abroad, the traveling across the West Bank, the Gaza to West Bank and the other way around is completely made difficult. Sometimes the cup matches between the winners of the West Bank and Gaza Cups are not being played because, for instance, the three goalkeepers are not allowed to cross. Everybody else is, and without any explanation. And we know without goalkeepers, we cannot have football. And sometimes half of the team is not allowed to cross, which is, again, making it impossible to hold these matches. So the targeting of Palestinian footballers with live ammunition, we have seen that in the past. For example, on January 14, two teenager football players made their way home from practice. They were shot with live ammunition in Al-Ram. And then there was a protest letter actually signed by 52 professional football players all over the world that highlighted the bomb attack by Israeli forces on a football stadium in Gaza. It was in November 2012. And this attack killed four teenage players. So there are always these instances where the games are being disrupted by force using tear gas. The second thing, or there is a racism that is very obvious and even used as a propaganda tool for some of the clubs. So for instance, Beit Am Jerusalem is very known for it. They are notoriously racist, Islamophobic club, and their fans are proud of the fact that there was never an Arab playing in the team. Yeah. And we have clubs from illegal settlements that are allowed to play in Israeli league, which isn't really just a matter of politics. It's a matter of a clear breach of FIFA and UEFA regulations. Yeah. So it seems that Israel can act with impunity. They can implement, not just politically do all these things, they can also do a lot of things in sport, which are kind of breach of FIFA statutes and be completely ignored in the sense that there is no punishment coming.
I mean, it sounds really, really horrific. But, David, how did Sepp Blatter then, the former FIFA president, use his influence to prevent that motion being presented at the 2015 FIFA Congress to actually suspend Israel?
Well, he doesn't have any power at all to do any such thing. So what he did was he manipulated the situation. He went to meet with Netanyahu and with the collaboration head of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas. And then he persuaded the Palestinian Football Authority to withdraw the motion on the grounds that they would be it would be agreed by the Israeli Football Association that they would criticise the Israeli government a bit more about the treatment of Palestinian players, which of course wasn't going to happen, never happened. No. And as a result, the motion was withdrawn, and therefore Israel wasn't expelled. So it was a manipulation on behalf of the kind of dominant interests in the association.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if they'd gone ahead with the criticism, it's a pretty inadequate response, isn't it?
Of course, yes.
But anyway, but Katerina, I mean, what's the background to the online petition then calling for Israel's suspension from FIFA?
There is not much background. It is something that I wrote. I wrote a letter. It's a 13-page letter detailing all the things that the breaches of international law, but also there's 5 page dedicated to the effects of everything that Israel and including Israeli Football Association are doing or not doing to, in fact, affect the Palestinian sports, Palestinian athletes, infrastructure. So this letter, I thought would be good to gather signatures to present to these governing bodies, not just FIFA, but IOC, UEFA, FIBA, everybody else. And the DiEM25 movement it was the place where I thought the petition will not get censored, and they have a safe platform. They were kind enough to co-organize this with me. So we have now 100,000 signatures, and I would ask everybody to go to dm25.org and sign this petition, share it on their social media to give it more exposure. This is a part of much larger project. We hold no illusion that a petition alone can change anything, but we have a lot of various sports groups, politicians, activists, BDS movements involved in this, and we will together very soon update the letter that is attached to the petition and send it to all the sports governing bodies. It's a part, it's a way to put pressure on them from that side as well.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations on getting as many signatures as you've already done, and hopefully today's program will drive more traffic to the petition, Katerina. But David, I mean, how did that so-called FIFA Monitoring Committee Israel-Palestine come about then, and why was its proposal to give Israel a yellow card blocked? I mean, is it the same sort of thing that happened with Sepp Blatter? I mean, what's going
on? Yes, I mean, the committee was set up as a result of one of the concessions from this previous process, and then it was supposed to produce a report. It took over two years to do so. The report didn't come up with any clear recommendations. They instead said that there were a number of options which could be taken. The yellow was the most severe, was supported by the Palestinian Football Authority, but was of course blocked on political grounds by Sepp Blatter and others. And so of course it was just a mechanism for throwing the whole thing into the long grass and making sure that no decisions were taken to act in any sensible way against the Israeli Football Association.
Right. Well, Katerina, I mean, do you think that the Palestinian FA's request for FIFA to include sanctions against Israel on the FIFA Congress agenda next month will actually result in any action then?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. And this is not because FIFA is simply applying its own policies. This is because FIFA is ignoring its own policies. And a letter was sent by Palestinian Football Association on 11 March, and still they didn't even send a formal confirmation of receipt, as is normal. An informal phone call was made, however, by the General Secretary of FIFA, and my impression is that it tried to discourage Palestinian Football Association from going ahead with its request, because they said that it's a political issue and we don't get into politics. But actually, many of the issues raised by Palestinian FA were not political at all. And FIFA has a long history of ignoring and actively repressing Palestinian issue. And as pointed out already in 2017, they binned their own report of their own committee that it established to monitor and report on the situation in Palestine. And that committee was established so that FIFA doesn't have to take decision in regard to Israel, so that it can postpone it until in few years the committee issues a report. When the report came, it was binned. So, well, the president of FIFA, Infantino, is actually largely regarded as an Israeli man. When he was elected, Avraham Luzan, he was an Israeli FA chairman at the time, he said that he's worked closely with Infantino for the years, and that since Infantino was the UEFA Secretary General even, and he said that he's a true personal friend and a friend of Israel, and yes, his election will make it difficult for anybody to impose sanction on Israeli football.
Thanks again to our guest, Katerina Piatlovich, and of course our resident expert, Professor David Miller. I hope you'll join us next time for more forensic investigations and analysis. But until then, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Anti-Israel campus protests in full swing in the U.S. and elsewhere in the world. Nearly 2,200 arrests have so far been made in the U.S. alone. The U.N. says Israel's devastation of Gaza has been unprecedented since World War II, that reconstruction requires some $30 to $40 billion and will take decades to complete. And in Yemen, masses of people hold rallies in support of Palestinians in Gaza and in condemnation of Israeli atrocities against them.